alla mattina. Appena alzata, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao alla mattina.
Hello and welcome back to the Working Class History Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Matt.
Today we're going to be talking about youth resistance movements within fascist Europe pre and during World War II in France, Austria and Germany itself. Despite years of Nazi brainwashing and dictatorial repression, groups of young people rebelled against ultra-hierarchical, regimented fascist society. They rejected the militarism of the Hitler Youth, the state-sanctioned cultural activities and aesthetics, and the ideology of obedience and the work ethic. Risking arrest, torture, and being sent to the concentration camps, they met in underground bars and clubs, danced to swing music, and fought fascists in the streets. We're going to be focusing on four main groups: the Edelweiss Pirates and the Swing Kids in Germany, the French Zazus, and the Austrian Schlurfs. And we are very pleased to be joined by Nick Heath, a historian and member of the Anarchist Communist Group.
Hello.
So, thanks for joining us, Nick. So,
my pleasure.
So to start with, some World War II resistance movements are quite well known, like the French Resistance, the Yugoslav Partisans, etc. But a lot of others, especially in the Axis countries themselves, are much less so. And even when people do talk about resistance in Germany, say, people often focus more on the formal political groups like the Socialist Party, the Social Democrats, the SPD and the Communist Party. The KPD, but in Germany, Austria and Vichy France and Nazi-occupied France, there were working-class youth cultural movements which were very much anti-Nazi, and perhaps the biggest of these was the Edelweiss Pirates in Germany. So, Nick, can you tell us who were the Edelweiss Pirates?
Well, they seem to be predominantly working-class youth who organised against the Hitler Youth and the female equivalent of that, the Hitler Mädchen. And they also confronted the Nazi youth organisations on the street in pitched battles. And they often got the better of the of the Hitler Youth. Alongside that, there were other groups of youth like the Leipzig Mutten, who were more openly political, but there were connections between all of these groups, as we'll see.
So with the Edelweiss Pirates,
yes.
How many were there?
It's hard to say. Well, it was probably in the hundreds, or up to into the thousands, and they organised sort of youth activities that are so common in Germany, that were common since the 19th century. You know, you got the development of youth groups going out into the countryside. The groups that used to go out and enjoy nature, hike, and so yes, they were into hiking, and they used to like to wear Czech shirts. And neckerchiefs as well, sort of red neckerchiefs.
Was that subversive in itself, the fashion, or at all? Or?
I think they wanted to show how different they were from the uniformed Hitler Youth, and while wearing something casual. You know, they wanted to show that they were distinct from this regimented Volkische, a group of the Hitler Youth.
I mean, in terms of the numbers, I read that in Cologne, the Gestapo files listed 3,000 Edelweiss Pirates in the city. So it's quite a significant number, just in that single city.
Yeah, so Cologne was a stronghold. You've got to remember that 13 young people, one of whom was a teenager, were hanged by the Nazis in Cologne, and some of them had previously been Edelweiss Pirates. They were involved in resistance activities.
Yeah, that was the Ehrenfeld.
Yes, that's group. Right, the Ehrenfeld.
Yeah, I think six of them were pirates and others.
Yes, that's right.
Resistance Party. Yeah, there's a photograph of the of the executions, which is horrible. Mm. But there's a 2004 film called The Idlewise Pirates, which kind of fictionalizes that story. So you know, you said a bit about what they wore.
Mm.
Can you say more about that? Like, what was it about their general sort of style?
Well, obviously, apart from the checkered shirts and the bandanas, they also had an Edelweiss emblem that they wore. So badge or actual.
So the Edelweiss, is that a flower?
It's an alpine flower.
Right.
Yes.
I heard somewhere that was Hitler's favourite flower. Mm. And that they wanted to ruin it for him.
Oh.
I don't know if that's true. But I like the idea of it.
Yeah.
So we spoke a little bit that they would go on walks in the country. Yeah. Were there any other sort of cultural activities that they organised? Or
it was mostly, they were a rambling group, as well as being, organising in the towns and bashing Nazis.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a violent country walks society. Yeah.
So there was an incident when there was a link up between one German anarchist who was in the FAUD and
That's the German anarcho syndicalist union.
Yes, the anarcho syndicalist union. And he came to the help of some Edelweiss pirates who were being attacked by the Nazis, and they actually they formed links as a result of that.
Mm-hmm. And how political were the Edelweiss pirates generally?
They didn't want anything to do with the formal political organisations, mm-hmm. And at the end, towards the end of the war, when the communists and the socialists, for that matter, tried to start recruiting, they didn't have, they rejected these people.
Mm-hmm.
So while they were anti-Nazi, they seemed to have suspicion of the Communist Party and the mm-hmm. and the Socialist Party.
Walter Mayer, a former leader of the Düsseldorf Edelweiss Pirates, explained the ideology of his local group in an interview with the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.
If I were forced to give you one word, I would say anti-authoritarian. We're not going into psychoanalysis here. It may be because I hate it. Authority of a... But I really did not hate authority of a benevolent man, but authority was always in my life somehow related to something bad. My father's authority means beating me up. The principal authorities, there was nothing positive about that. So the guys becoming leaders, telling me what to do, that was no good. So anti-authority is probably the answer, coupled with lust for adventure. So I was nothing but, for us, like a gang. And like gangs here, kind of resent other gangs and resent the police and resent authority. That's what I did. I resented authority because to me authority was negative.
In the early days of Nazism, a lot of young people quite enjoyed being in the Hitler Youth and the BDM. There were activities like sports, camping and games, and involvement in the Nazi youth groups gave young people the opportunity to play different authorities off against each other, so they could avoid schoolwork by saying they had to do Hitler Youth work and vice versa. But as the drive to war progressed, the Hitler Youth and the BDM changed to be more a recruiting and training ground for the army. This was less attractive to young people, and the groups didn't get popular enough for the Nazis' liking, so they made membership compulsory. And when the war started, older Hitler Youth members were called up to the military, and the organisation became much more openly repressive. The leaders were then replaced by middle-class students, who then had the right to order around rank-and-file members, many of whom were working-class teenagers who had been working in the factories since they were 14, who really didn't appreciate it. So here, Walter explains what led him to form the Dusseldorf Pirates.
I was pretty much the king on the street. If something had to be done, like stealing apples or whatever, they would call me. And I saw guys that I considered sissies and weaklings. They suddenly got a star. They became lieutenants. And I had to salute them. Well, I was not about to do a thing like that. That brought upon the first resentment. That's how it started all. And there were others who kind of felt the same way I did. That prompted me to start a little movement.
And I think one thing that's really interesting about the part is that when they started, yeah. It was already after a considerable period of Nazi rule. That's so right. Their origins, would you say, that then their origins aren't in the Socialist Party or SPD or the Communist Party?
No, they're not related to any of that at all, to any of the street fighting organisations that, you know, that confronted Nazis and one of the Socialists. Or the communists, or some of the council communist groups, you know, who had a Rotter Kampfer organisation as well.
Does that mean Red Struggle?
Red Strugglers, yeah.
So these youth who got involved in this had been educated by the Nazis.
Yeah, they were brought up under Nazism.
Mm-hmm.
As were the other groups that we're going to be talking about, for example, the Swing Kids.
Yeah. And because sort of the hit, you mentioned before that the Hitler Youth, and there was the Hitler Youth, but I forget for girls and for
The Hitler Mädchen.
Yeah. And so the Edelweiss Pirates, did they mirror that division?
Yeah. Oh yes. A lot of women involved in the groups, as you can see from some photographs. You know, they're very much mixed, equal numbers of men, young men and young women.
Yeah. I guess that must have been part of the appeal of the group to engaging in mixed activities.
That's right.
Here, Walter describes how the Dusseldorf Pirates would meet and what they would get up to.
We had meetings generally, generally at a cafe on King's Avenue, which is in Germany. There are a number of streets which are well known, like Fifth Avenue. Well, King's Avenue in Düsseldorf is one of the best known avenues in the world. It's gorgeous, wide, and has a river in the middle and all chestnut trees and so on. Well, there was a cafe, and in the back of the cafe was a pool room. We used to play pool. And we had our little meetings there. And one would say, we have a new member. And we would ask him questions, test him, and why do you like to join us? And, you know, wanted to have some assurance, and what are we going to do next? And maybe one would say, you know, the Hitler Youth, they all store their equipment at such and such a place. Let's make it disappear. Okay, when are we going to meet? Such and such a time. And that's what we did. It became came to the point where we became enemies, and people begin to look for us because we went a little too drastic. We started maybe by deflating the tires, then we made the whole bicycle disappear. So it came to the point where too many complained.
Eventually, Walter would be arrested by the Nazis for looting and being a leader of the Edelweiss Pirates. He was sent to a concentration camp where he became extremely ill and almost died, but fortunately he was able to escape and was given shelter by a local farmer.
So you mentioned some of the cultural stuff. And so, Can you tell us anything more about more sort of overtly political resistance type activities that they did they get involved in?
They started getting involved in resistance activities, distributing anti-Nazi leaflets, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And there were links with formal groups like White Rose Group of the Shoal.
I think the White Rose Group are interesting because they are, a group, a very brave,
very brave group,
but very small, also very small group of Christian pacifist students.
That's right, yeah.
And who were all beheaded.
That's right.
For distributing anti-Nazi leaflets.
Yeah.
But they, even though they were much smaller, they're quite a lot more well-known than the Edelweiss Pirates.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a reason for that?
Well, it might be connected with disapproval of dissident youth movements, both the Edelweiss Pirates and the Swing Kids. They've only recently really been written up, mm-hmm. I'd say. You've got to remember a lot of these youth movements were repressed under both the Allies and the Communists at the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. So could you say a little bit more about how they were, the sort of repression they faced from Allies and the Communists?
Yes, well, some were sentenced to long prison terms in Allied territories.
Kind of American-British zones.
One was sentenced to death, it was commuted. People, belonging to these dissident youth movements, there's an obligatory sentence for Edelweiss Pirates of 25 years in East Germany.
In the Soviet zone.
Yeah.
And is that because of their general sort of anti-work, their general kind of anti-work feelings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were seen that these were youth movements that were feared because they questioned orthodox morality, the work ethic, all of those things. There's another group, of course, the Swing Kids who also questioned these ideas as well.
So how did the Swing Kids differ from the Pirates?
The thing with the Swing Kids is, whereas the Edelweiss Pirates were predominantly working class, the Swing Kids were upper class, really. A lot of them came from well-to-do backgrounds.
Mm.
They had a love of jazz, which they acquired it through in places like Hamburg, where there was a very strong Swing Kids movement, because it's a port town. It's a bit like Liverpool. You got all these musical influences coming in, and they were very keen on a lot of swing and jazz.
So was that music predominantly by African-Americans?
Yes, some African Americans and some Jewish musicians as well, and it was seen as entartata, degenerate art, because of these connections to both Negro music, as the Nazis called it, and also Jewish musicians, they also developed a style partly taken from. From American movies, and partly from English styles as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they were the sort of things they wore were very similar to what the Zazus wore in France. They often had a rolled umbrella. Both the Zazus and the Swing Kids had rolled umbrellas, long draped jackets in the case of the males, and greased up. With quite long hair.
Mm.
Both these, the French Zazus, which we'll talk about later, and the Swing Kids had that look, with thick-soled shoes, or often too large outfits, as it were, a big, great big jacket, big trousers.
Mm.
And and the young women wore short skirts and striped stockings and lipstick as well, bright red lipstick. And there were two reasons for this, both in the cases of the Zazus and the Swing Kids. It's use of stuff, of material that was actually rationed. So it's putting two fingers up to the whole idea of rationing, you know, of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, with their makeup, they wore heavy makeup, lipstick, it was challenged in the whole idea, the Volkish idea of you know, of healthy German females. No makeup, you know, a suntanned, healthy.
I mean, in terms of the style that you described with, you know, with the hair, for the men at least, with the hair and the thick sole shoes, it reminded me a little bit of the Teds. Was it similar?
I would say so, yes. The phenomenon started as a fashion amongst the young upper class in London. They started wearing Edwardian style clothing, but it was taken up by working class youth. There were people who had a disposable income, and they said, "We're going to dress well. We're going to dress well. You know, we deserve to. Yeah. You know, there's a certain pride there."
Mm.
And so with the Swing Kids,
yes.
You know, it seems relatively innocuous,
yeah.
Listening to music and, yeah. You know, but how did the Nazi authorities react to them?
Well, they reacted really ferociously. Himmler said that it had to be crushed because, as well as, you know, the admiration for American music, there's also admiration for Britain. So the Anglophile tendencies. So, I've already talked about the rolled umbrella. They also wore a Homburg hat. The Homburg hat, which is the hat that was popularised by Sir Anthony Eden. They wore those as well, and they even wore little Union Jack badges as well.
It's like mods a bit later.
They were a bit like that. Yes. And along with that was the love of jazz and swing.
So what did Nazi authorities do about it?
Well, Himmler recommended sentences of between at least 2 and 3 years with regular beatings in concentration camps, especially for the ringleaders. He wanted it to be eradicated, this Anglophilia, as he called it. He wanted it to be eradicated. He regarded it as very dangerous. Quite a few Swinkies got sent to concentration camps, both male and female.
Horrible. Did
they get involved in activities?
Yeah, they
well?
Started getting involved in resistance activities, and you know, they were, as I said, there were links with the White Rose group as well.
I mean, it kind of seems if you're going to be sent to a concentration camp for listening to a record, then you might as well pick up a gun, you know.
Yeah. They started distributing propaganda and all that sort of stuff. So, in some ways, they were a reaction to, you know, being brought up under the Nazis. The Swing Kids were a reaction to the official Nazi youth events that were put on with this new German community dancing, which is horribly tedious and boring, you know, Volkish dancing.
And I can't so that, the music that, would have been great yeah. either.
No, it was horrible. So they set up their own swing clubs. And eventually, you know, these places were banned, and they passed the Nazis passed a law saying you can't go to one of these clubs if you're under 21, so they were driven into clandestinity.
So how old, more or less, were a lot of these
Most kids? Of them were teenagers or early 20s.
So you said that, so a lot of them were teenagers.
Mm.
And so were these teenagers also being sent to concentration camps? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Himmler really thought they were a big threat to the German nation.
And this was normal for all of these sort of anti-Nazi youth subcultures? Yeah. They were all around this kind of age? These were
They were all in their teens or early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can see, you know, a huge groundswell of dissent emerging in Nazi Germany.
And do you think that says anything about the potential of cultural, you know, things like music and culture to cultural movements to do things like oppose racism and authoritarianism?
I think it's underestimated the power of culture, power of music. It should be used more as a weapon. I think rock and roll itself helped break down the racist, it was apartheid system in America. Music was used in the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa as well. And I think it's a potent thing, it's an underestimated weapon in our armoury.
Mm-hmm.
And more needs to be made of it.
So going back to the Edelweiss Pirates, as the war progressed and the situation got more dire in Germany, how did their activity develop?
Well, as I said, you know, there were confrontations on the street between the Edelweiss Pirates and the Hitler Youth, and it culminated in the attempt on the Gestapo headquarters in Cologne, which led to the trial where 13 were hanged.
So, and what did the attempt entail?
Blowing up the Gestapo HQ.
Yeah, okay. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
But that particular attempt was foiled.
Mm.
So
it was.
Yeah. Although they did assassinate the leader of the Gestapo in the city, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned the Edelweiss Pirates who were executed and others who were sent to concentration camps and things like that. How are they remembered in Germany today?
Well, the Nazis regarded them as criminals, and as late as 1987, the authorities were looking at old Gestapo records describing them as criminals and deciding that description would stand. And it wasn't until 2005 that they were recognised as resistance fighters, which is quite appalling.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah. So 2005, I think that date's quite sort of tough, because I guess it's just the year before that the film about them called The Edelweiss Pirates came out. Because previously there had been films made about both the Swing Kids and the White Rose Group, who were better known. So do you think that film has helped, you know, resurrect the memory of the Edelweiss Pirates?
Yes, I think so. And more stuff came on the internet about them as well. That all helped as well.
I mean, I think also it feels there's... for me anyway, it feels there's a difference in how they were, you know, treated in the popular memory, also in part due to their class background.
Yeah.
Do you think that affected how they were remembered?
I'm sure it was to do with their class background. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, working class movements they're painted out of official history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bourgeois
history and Stalinist history.
Yeah.
It's always been the case.
Yeah, and I suppose, as you said, the Edelweiss Pirates were being imprisoned in the Eastern Bloc.
They were,
and the Western.
And the Western
Bloc, and the West as well. And as we will see, as the case with the other dissident youth groups.
Les cheveux tout frisottés, le col le haut de 18 pieds. Ah, ils sont zettes. Le doigt comme ça en l'air, le veston qui traîne, traîne par terre. Ah, ils sont zettes. Ils ont des pantalons d'une coupe inouïe qui arrivent un peu au-dessus des genoux. Et qu'ils pleuvent ou qu'ils ventent, ils ont un parapluie, des grosses lunettes noires et puis surtout. Ils ont l'air dégoûtés de tous ces petits.
Across the border, France was occupied by the Germans in 1940. They installed the collaborationist Vichy regime to run the country and its colonial empire. The fascist Vichy regime had an ultra-conservative outlook and morality and started to use a whole range of laws against young people who, restless and disenchanted, began to rebel. Some of these were the Zazus, who met in cafes, basement clubs, and secret parties and listened to swing and jazz music. Nick has put together a playlist of some of the tracks they and their Austrian counterparts, the Schlurfs, were listening to, so check it out in the links below.
The Zazus were very similar in their style, which I've already mentioned, to the swing kids, the sort of clothes they wore. They also liked swing music. It was a bit of a cross-class movement. For example, it seems to be mostly based in Paris. In the Champs-Élysées, the select part of Paris, there was a Zazu movement, basically rich kids.
Mm.
But in the Latin Quarter, they were more working class.
And again, with them, they were all jazz listeners.
Yeah, so listening to jazz and swing, and you could see the way they dressed, their makeup, etc., and their attitudes. They were seen as slackers, and questioning the work ethic, seen as lazy. They're into fun. Really,
terrible.
In the same way that swing kids were in, and that was regarded by the Vichy regime as dreadful. Yeah, because fascism is about totally denying life, denying joy, all of those things. You know, which is one of the reasons healthy young people revolt against this sort of thing, because young people want to have fun.
I want to have fun and not be told what to do.
What to do. March around in a square all the time.
Exactly.
Other fun.
Yeah. And regimented dances and horrible uniforms as well. That sort of thing. So it was natural that these things should happen.
Mm.
I wish there's a lot about the human spirit, really.
Mm. I mean, like you said, these were often kids brought up under Nazism.
They were, yeah.
So if they knew was Nazism, and still, they rebelled against it.
Well, shows you there's hope.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so, how did the press in France? I guess the collaborationist press in France. What did the press think about the Zazus?
Well, there's similar campaigns against them.
Mm.
And, the Vichy Youth organisation used to attack them, and you've got examples, you've seen illustrations of Zazu youths having their hair shaved off, with clippers by these Vichy thugs. Yeah. And
they called that scalping, didn't they?
Scalping. They called it scalping. And there's a Vichy Youth magazine with a illustration of this muscular Vichy youth shaving the hair off this cringing and effete Zazu.
Vichy being the name of the collaborationist French.
That's right.
French government.
The collaborationist government, which was based in the town of Vichy, spa town of Vichy, and it was led by Marshal Pétain.
And so, were there similar reprisals by Zazus that sort of similar to maybe the Eidweiss pirates carried out on
No, they were. It wasn't as developed as politicised as a movement as the Edelweiss Pirates became. Mm. The things with the Swing Kids and the Zazzies was their attitude towards the war. They didn't want to be involved in it.
Mm.
Did not want to be involved in it. And in some ways, it was a form of detachment from the awful situation that was going on. Apparently, with the liberation of Paris, some Zazzies joined in the fighting.
Mm.
But, you know, they were still regarded as, in the aftermath with the defeat of the Nazis in France, they were still regarded as degenerate, as were the Swing Kids in Germany.
And so did the fascist authorities try and repress the Zazzies in a similar way to the
Yes, they were rounded up, sent to work camps to be taught a lesson. So if it's very similar to what happened to these Swing Kids.
Mm.
And some of them were treated appallingly in the concentration camps.
So you mentioned what they wore.
Mm.
Did they have any other sort of defining features or anything?
Some of them started wearing the Star of David as a protest, which is just quite courageous because Hitler forced Jews to wear the Star of David so that it can be spotted on the street. And some of them started wearing Stars of David as a protest.
In 1938, Austria was annexed by Nazi Germany in the Anschluss. One of the groups who resisted fascism were the Schlerfs, working-class Austrian youth who rejected school, work, and the army, and instead embraced fun, fashion, swing music, and sexuality, often clashing with the Hitler Youth. The origin of the word Schlerf can be traced back to an old Viennese put-down of men and boys who preferred fun to responsibility, and was a term they proudly applied to themselves as well.
That developed in Vienna. They're different from both the Zazzies and the Swing Kids in that they were predominantly working class, very much working class, tough working class kids who dressed in the same way as the Zazzies and the Swing Kids, the same outfits, draped jackets, thick-soled shoes, umbrellas, that sort of thing. And they also engaged in pitched battles with the Nazis as well.
What about the women? What did they wear?
The women wore similar outfits to Swing Kids and the Zazzu young women. So shortish skirts, big clumpy shoes, big soles. Again, you know, bright red lipstick, heavy makeup. And then the hair piled up, American style, on the head. So, and the women also carried umbrellas as well.
In terms of the style of the men, it sounds quite similar to the Zoot Suiters in America.
Yes, well, it's interesting, isn't it, that all these movements started at the same time. And the Zoot Suiter phenomenon was very similar. It also rejected the work ethic, rationing, all of those things. I've written about it. I've written an article for LibCom about the Zoot Suiters and the persecution that came down on them.
Yeah, because that was also interesting, as it was predominantly African American and Latino.
That's right. Yes, the Chicano from Los Angeles, but there were also Chinese and Filipino Zoot Suiters as well. So it's interesting, isn't it? They you see these groups are very similar, being both persecuted in Nazi Germany and Vichy France and in the so-called democratic United States. It's rather revealing.
What's the sort of repression that they faced in the United States?
Well, there were riots when members of the armed forces attacked them. And a lot of it is, I think, linked to racism as well, against African-Americans and against Chicano. It was also because they didn't like the way they dress. Because it thumbed its nose at the idea of rationing, display of...
Stylistic decadence.
Right. And it flaunted the fact that, you know, all this material, we don't care about rationing.
Which, of course, you know, for them, they may have only had one large suit, whereas rich people would have still had dozens of suits. So it's, you know, it's not like they did actually use a lot of material.
Yeah. Although a lot of them worked in factories, you know, because on the West Coast there was a boom in shipbuilding and armaments because of the war. So they had some bit of disposable income for the first time, so they were able to buy these zoot suits.
So how much? Because you mentioned how there's all these different groups in different areas that were all kind of dressing very similarly, listening to similar music.
Yeah.
Do you know how much they would have known about each other?
I really don't know. I would have thought that they would have found it difficult to find out about each other. It seems sort
of pre-Instagram and you know, all of that.
Hashtag slurf.
Yeah.
I think it just happened at the same time. You know, it's very, very interesting. Obviously, more research should be done into it, if there are any connections. You've got to remember there are also movements in places. In Prague, it was a similar group, like the Sassoos, called the Pataki. And then there were groups called the Kids, just called the Kids, in both Copenhagen and Amsterdam as well.
Under Nazi occupation.
That's right, yeah.
So were they also kind of defined by swing and jazz music,
I believe so, but there's not that much has been written about them that I can find. So very, very little research on those groups.
Well, if anyone listening wants a research project,
yes,
you know, please go do that. Thanks and let us know.
Here, it would be fascinating.
Yes, you've got to remember that a similar thing happened in Russia, but much later. In 1959, a similar youth movement started appearing called the Stilyagi, the stylists, I think it more or less means in Russian.
Can't imagine the communist authorities would have liked that.
Well, strangely enough, they opened the door to it because they organised a one-off festival of American music. So it was rockabilly, rock and roll and jazz. So young people went to it and they said, cool, this is good. They started dressing in a different way, and they were repressed as well.
Oh, so subsequently?
Yeah.
With the Schlurfs, what did they do? What did they get up to?
Well, they also engaged in pitch battles with they were very virulently anti-Nazi in pitch battles with the Hitler Youth, and they were quite ferocious. You know, they carried knives and they often defeated the groups of Hitler Youth.
And what sort of cultural activities did the Schlurfs organise?
They had the usual clandestine swing events, that sort of thing.
Did they ramble as well, or not so much?
No, they're not into rambling. It was a thoroughly urban phenomenon.
Right, okay.
the Zazzies weren't into rambling either.
No, I mean, looking at their clothes.
The shoes probably wouldn't have been very apt.
They would not want to mess with their shoes or their hair.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, Edelweiss Pirates and Zazus were both repressed by the Allied authorities, the democratic, the nice new democratic authorities after the war. Yeah. Was there a similar situation with the Schlurfs?
Yes, I mean, they were still regarded as slackers, as anti-work ethic after the end of the war. And the term was still used as in a derogatory sense in the media for quite a long time afterwards.
The Schlurfs clash with Hitler Youth on the streets in the Prater district of Vienna, while the Nazis disrupted Schlurf gigs and launched police raids. In November 1941, three Schlurfs were arrested by the Gestapo as they were destroying a Hitler Youth poster which depicted young men and women drinking, smoking, dancing and having fun, with the slogan, "We reject these." In 1942, 50 Schlurfs launched a full-out assault on a Hitler Youth house. Meanwhile, Hitler Youths shaved Schlurfs' heads, and the Schlurfs responded with attacks on the group and by shredding their uniforms. These countercultural movements, which sprung up simultaneously, challenged not just Nazi ideology, but also the ideology of democratic capitalism in the West and state socialism in the East. As with the Edelweiss Pirates, the newspapers of Austrian democracy denounced the weed of the Schlurfs that threatened the healthy tree of Austria. These movements have been neglected by many historians, so further research on them is needed. So if you want to work with us on this, please drop us a line on info@workingclasshistory.com. As always, we've got more information and links to further reading on all these groups with photos below, as well as Nick's playlist of Schlurfs and Zazu and Swing Kids music. So check them out.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to support our work, please go to our website, workingclasshistory.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/workingclasshistory, Twitter @WRKClassHistory. And if you want to donate to help us keep doing these podcasts and our work in archiving working class history, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/workingclasshistory. Thanks, guys. Sui montagna, oh bella ciao, bella ciao.